like to talk to us about view. We have rear view mirrors on our cars, and sometimes we call them side view mirrors on the outside of the car. Sometimes we have a other instances that we use this word view. I like to read a definition of view that I found. It means to survey, to examine with the eye, to look with attention, or for the purpose of examining, to inspect, to view. View differs from look, see, and behold in expressing more particular or continued attention to the thing which is the object of sight. So, I'd like for us to focus on that phrase with the help of the Lord in that definition. View differs from look, see, and behold. Many times we catch something in what we call our peripheral vision, and we know there was something, but maybe we can't really tell what it was. The other night, especially since the summertime is hot, I tend to mow my grass in the dark, and I have headlights on my mowers, and so I was mowing, and after dark, the sun had been down for an hour, and as I was mowing, the lights on the mower attracts bugs, and we have lots of bugs in this part of the country, and so there was bugs coming around, and these beetle-like June bugs or something was coming, getting in my shirt collar and all of that. And so peripheral vision is not very good in the dark. But something hit me right here, and it had long legs, and it felt like it was going to go down in my shirt. So I reached and grabbed it, and I could feel those legs, and I just kind of squished it and throwed it away. And it, I don't know that it stung me, but there was something about that bug that made my skin start to burn and be feel like it was inflamed. And also when I squeezed it and throwed it away, it kind of done the same thing to my thumb. So my thumb and my neck right here was sore. I don't know what it was. But it was something, and I can just tell you by what that little brief sensation I had when I had a hold of it, that it wasn't a beetle. It didn't have that crunchy shell. It didn't have the little hooks on its feet. It was something that had kind of long legs, but I don't know what it was. I don't think it was a wasp. I think it would have just nailed me and left a red spot, but something was there. But it wasn't something I can give you a lot of information about. And peripheral vision is like that. Sometimes what we see is something that we just aren't very informed about. So another situation that's been very real and very apparent in my married life is we can be driving and meet a car, and my wife will say to me, "Well, that looks like Jamie and Drew's car." And I'll say, "No, that's not Jamie and Drew's car. That's a Volvo, and they drive something else." Well, she said it was white. She saw it, but she didn't really view it. Okay? We can observe things with our eyes. There is difference between sight and really viewing. All right? So the definition I read is viewing differs from look or see or behold and expressing more particular or continued attention to the thing which is the object of the sight. Now, when something comes in our peripheral vision, if it continues, it transitions from peripheral vision, because they test you for that when you're in a doing a driving test or maybe an eye exam. They test your peripheral vision. And they want to see when you start detecting something to the side, even though you're looking straight ahead. And they measure that, and they write numbers down if they're checking your eyes. And I don't know what they write down, but they put something down as a reference point. Your peripheral vision is, compared to other people, it's whatever, greater than or less than. Some people have almost no peripheral vision, so you're known as having like tunnel vision when you have no peripheral vision. If you're not looking straight at it, you don't see it. But if something comes around in our peripheral vision, the anticipation is they get around to the point that it's in our line of sight. But it really doesn't mean we're viewing it if it's in our line of sight. We might think that it's a Chevy when it's a Ford. We might not know what is the distinctive differences. My brother and I, in growing up, in the traveling that we would do, going to camp meeting or visiting relatives or any place we went, it was always a game to try to identify all of the vehicles we would meet or pass on the road. And we would call out those names, and then when we would actually pass the vehicle, whether we was overtaking them or meeting them, if we could read the name or confirm, it was always a competition. So, you know, we began to not only see, but we were really viewing. What we were looking for, distinctive characteristics. And the next level up is to do that in the dark. So you're coming up and you're meeting headlights, or you're seeing taillights, and you begin to not only try to tell what brand of vehicle it is, but maybe the year model it is. You'd be surprised at how accurate you can get with not just seeing it, but viewing it and paying attention to the things that are, it said here, expressing more particular or continued attention. You don't discern the difference between a Kia and a Honda just in a glance. A Hyundai and a Honda, even the name kind of sounds alike. You know, and sometimes they look almost the same. Have you noticed how that one brand seems to copy a more expensive brand? I don't know how they get by with it, but it almost seems like that's their purpose, is to get just as close to looking like something that costs more money, but yet it don't have that other brand name on it. But if you begin to notice, there are distinctive little things that you can see that's a little different. So I want us to think today about what is in our view, and what do we spend time viewing, not just with our literal eyes. In fact, that's a very low level of my subject lesson, my subject matter this morning. I'd like for us to look at song number 213 in our book. It says, "Pilgrim of Jesus, o'er life's trouble see, courage and onward pursue." We have things that we face in life that we need courage for. He says, "A crown of rejoicing is waiting for thee. Ever keep heaven in view." So right in the midst of whatever dilemma that you might be facing, he says, ever keep heaven in view. And the tone of the song is pilgrim of Jesus. Pilgrim is someone traveling from one point to another, maybe usually implies a long journey and maybe of uncertain destination and maybe uncertain expectation. Verse 2 says, pilgrim of Jesus, what saddens thy brow? Are not his promises true? Ever had anything that was disappointing? Anything that was caused you to be a little discouraged? He says, how needless thy sorrow. He's bidding thee now. He's bidding you to what? Ever keep heaven in view. So what is it about keeping heaven in view? What is the correlation, or how does it correspond to the troubles that we face? You know, if we have something in our view, something that we're constantly turning back to, something that we're looking for more details about, then the things that seem to be troubles, that seem to be problems, that could cause us to be sad, those things begin to diminish in importance. You know, if you haven't been home to your parents' place for an extended period of time, and you're maybe not, you know, it's still, their parents are still alive and well, and just the thought of what my parents' house looks like and what it would be like to be with them for a day or two or some, you know, those kind of things. That's what's in our mind's eye. You know what that term is? Your mind's eye. You can be sitting here today and something totally different be in your mind's eye. I trust it's not, but I want you to think about today about keeping heaven in view. That's our subject this morning. What is in our view? What is it that we want to be able to pay more particular attention to, something that's continually on our mind and in our heart. He says, pilgrim of Jesus, O lift up thy head, ask and thy strength he'll renew. And while in the footprints of Jesus you tread, you know you're facing some real things in real life. And sometimes it can be very discouraging, but ever keep heaven in view. Don't that help us put things in perspective? You know, there's many times in my line of work that if I didn't have a view of something above that rusty old bolt or that thing that I can't get my hand in there to do, if I didn't have something else in my mind's eye, it'd be very, very discouraging. And you too. You know, how many times do you wash the same article of clothing? How many times do you sweep up the dirt from the floor? How many times do you clean the windows? How many times do you think if they would just be more careful, whether it's your husband or your children, if they just wouldn't, you know, little children go up and put their noses on the window, and I don't know why we did that when we were children. I don't have any urge to do it now, but I did then. And then when you step away, guess what's there? These little smudges on the glass. How many times do you clean the same window? You know, if we don't have something else in view in our mind's eye, life can be discouraging. He says, pilgrim of Jesus, that Eden above. Now we're thinking about what's in our line of sight. He says, pilgrim of Jesus, that Eden above long has been waiting for you, and soon thou shalt reach that fair mansion of love. Ever keep heaven in view. I don't want us to ever think that Eden above, that paradise, that place with the Father and our brother, the son, is going to be diminished. I want us to keep that at the top of the list. It's going to be wonderful to be. There's a song that says, "Won't it be wonderful to be there?" And I want it to always be that in our mind. So let's go on a little bit more. I want us to think about this view expressing more particular and continued attention. Did you know that the whole purpose of marketing in our world today is to change someone from seeing to viewing? The first time that you see something, it may just be a blip on the radar, and it's like, "Huh, that's different." But the whole idea of marketing is to put that in your line of sight and attach things to it that will cause you to look at it and begin to consider its value. There are very few things that's successful in the world and the world of commerce today that doesn't have marketing behind it. They continue to present it to us in a manner that would cause us to think about it and cause us to discover the attributes that would make it attractive to us. Did you know it's much easier to convert a viewer to a buyer than a looker? If you're just, I remember the days when people went window shopping. Anybody know what that term means now? Window shopping is when you didn't take any money necessarily. You just went to town and you went in and out of the clothing stores and the shoe stores and maybe home decor and all that like that. And you were just looking. And if something really caught your attention, you might go back and look a little more. And maybe you took your measuring tape, or maybe you checked the size of the thing, and maybe you went home and took something else in to see if it would match, whether it was another article of clothing or whatever it is. Maybe you did that. Most people do all that stuff online now, but there was a day that was pretty common. I remember, I believe it was my sister-in-law, one of them, that used to do a lot of window shopping in between her classes and stuff when she went to college. And she would, she had some of the stores figured out. They would start out at the retail price, and after a certain type of merchandise, particularly clothing, had been on the racks for a period of time, they would mark it down like 10%. And a few days later, anything that was left would be 20%. And she knew that if they couldn't sell the merchandise, it would get down. I don't know what it was. These are arbitrary numbers, but like 50% off. And if there was something that she was interested in and she began to view, it was more than just, "Oh, that's a jean jacket or a skirt, or that's a whatever. I don't know. Maybe it was a belt or something." And she said, "Well, I really want one of those, but I don't want to pay the price. I'm going to wait until it gets down to 50% off. I'm not going to buy one. I'm going to discipline myself." But she was viewing it. And she was looking at, she was weighing all of this. And I can remember a very few times that she would say, "I just felt like that it was worth it. I knew that if it was still left, it would get down to 50% off. But I decided to go ahead because I really wanted it." See, she had become a viewer and not just a looker. It's easier to convert a viewer to a buyer than just a looker. I'm thinking about those particular things in anticipation in our hopes of going to heaven, we have a song, number 198, that says, the title of it is Hope. It says, have we any hope within us of a life beyond the grave? You know, if you do, there's something you begin to anticipate, isn't there? In the sweet and vernal lands, do you know if this, our tabernacle, or our body, our mortal life, were to be dissolved, we've a house not made with hands? And as you begin to think about that and view that in your mind's eye, you know, if life here does not continue on forever, and that's not a secret, it's not going to, all of our lives here, if time keeps going on for another 100 years, it's not going to be a surprise, but I'm not going to be here. If the date 21-22 comes around, there's something you can just write down on your calendar. I will not be here. I ain't going to be here. January 1, 2022, I'm not going to be here. We might have somebody in this building that might be here, but they're going to be old too by then. You know, I know that if I continue down this path, it's going to fizzle out. My earthly tabernacle is going to be dissolved. But there is something else that I can anticipate. It's that Eden above that the other song talked about. It's the hope of a life within us beyond the grave. That's the life of my soul. And I keep that in my mind's eye. I continue to view that and consider that and think about the details. Oh, life is much more than steak and baked potatoes. Although I'm going to tell you, I like that a whole lot. And I like life. I really do. I enjoy life. But there's more to it than what this earthly tabernacle can be engaged in. There's more to it than that. And I want us to think and consider how important it is to have that view of heaven in our heart and in our mind. I won't read it all, but the verse, the chorus of this song says, we have a hope within our soul, brighter than the perfect day. God has given us His Spirit, and we want the world to hear it. And the doubts are passed away. You know, when we really begin to view something and we really begin to consider the particulars and the details of it, we become a believer in something. We really begin to become involved in that. And we can not only be a buyer, but we can be a promoter of the thing. And we want who to hear it? We want the world to hear it. If it's really something that we view. We really want others to know that you can have some of this too. It's there for all of us. It's there for you that may not even know it. Maybe it's in somebody's peripheral vision and they've caught a little glimpse, but your view can help them understand the value of having a relationship with the Lord. We have another song, Bright Anticipation, number 370 in our book. It says, verse 1, there's a voice full of sweetness and love. It is speaking so kindly to me. I will lead you to bright realms above where the Spirit forever is free. And this is the chorus. I am waiting, I am longing for the summons to come when from sorrow and trouble I'm free, when with Jesus I'm reigning in that heavenly home where forever its beauties I'll see. Now, I want to be ready And I want to have that view in my mind and in my heart to where the thought of going to heaven is not something to pull back from. But I'm not talking to you today because I feel like I'm fixing to go. I just want us to have this anticipation. You know, if we are looking forward to something, we're going to be interested in the details. We want to know, what's it going to be like? What's the experience going to feel like? We're looking forward to this. It's better than any vacation we could think about, right? But we just need to, well, we'll get to it, but I wrote a little thought that came to my mind. How do you convert something from something that's just in the line of sight to something where somebody is really viewing? You got to market it to them. You got to sell it to them. So I wonder how many times or how many people are over there in a heavenly paradise with that, what was the guy's name that got pulled up out of Abraham's bosom? Lazarus, is that right? He was the one that ate the crumbs from the rich man's table, you remember? You know, by this time, I'm sure there's other people in Abraham's bosom with him, don't you think? I wonder how many of them are there kind of feeling uncomfortable and all in Abraham's bosom and saying, you know, I sure don't know how I ended up here. I wonder what it'd be. Kind of like I wished I could go back and try this again and see what the other place is like. Do you reckon anybody's doing that? I'm sure there's not. There's such a peace and such a comfort and such a fulfillment of being there. I don't think there's one person that there's a thought crosses their mind, if we have a mind. I don't know how that works, but I don't think there's any entertaining of the idea, I wonder how that other place would have been. Nobody ever thinks that once they get there. You know, going to heaven is not the consequence of being a Christian. It's the result of being a Christian. It's the reward. It's something that we get there because we're anticipating. We want to go. We want to be ready. I hope all of us here have many years left to enjoy the blessings of the Lord here and to be in a blessing and encouragement to other people. And you know, He wants us to market it. He wants us to help others know that there's something much better than just having a thrill here. If your thrill is a zip line, or if your thrill is a big meal, or if your thrill is whatever it might be, there's more. There's something much better than that. Although I don't think there's anything wrong with a good meal or riding on a zip line. Just make sure it's hooked up good on both ends. But there's something about the reality of I can have this assurance that I can go to heaven, and I want to keep that in my view, not just something that's out there and, yeah, if I behave myself, that's where I have to go. You see? There's more to it than that. I want us to have some anticipation. Well, let's turn to Psalms. I may not read it all, I thought I would, but Psalms 27, you got some homework to do. Read this over and over. I'd like to start maybe in verse 1. It says, "The Lord is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear? The Lord is the strength of my life. Of whom shall I be afraid? When the wicked, even my enemies and my foes, come upon me to eat up my flesh, they stumbled and fell, though an host should encamp against me, my heart shall not fear, Though war should rise against me, in this will I be confident. One thing have I desired of the Lord, and that will I seek after, that I may dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life, to behold the beauty of the Lord and inquire in his temple. So there has to be not only anticipation, but a desire. You know, the difference between daydreams and fulfillment is desire. You know, you can daydream about some accomplishment in this world, but if you don't ever have a real desire and you don't really put some legs and feet on it, there'll be no fulfillment. You can daydream about something all you want to, but when you really begin desiring it, there's going to be something that starts happening. You're going to make some changes. So, a detail about our view of heaven, a view of eternity with God. Is there anticipation? Is there? Is there desire? Do we really desire to be there? David said in this psalm, "One thing have I desired of the Lord, that will I seek after, that I may dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life, and behold the beauty of the Lord, and to inquire in his temple." You can read the rest of it, and he just embellishes on that concept more and more. So, one other detail about viewing: anticipation, desire, and focused attention. Let's go to Luke, the 24th chapter. Luke chapter 24 and verse 53. He says, let me start in verse 50. This is at the very end of, it's the end of the book of Luke, but it's also the end of Jesus' time here on earth. And he says in verse 50, "And he led them out as far as Bethany, and he lifted up his hands and blessed them. And it came to pass, while he blessed them, he was parted from them and carried up into heaven." So this is what we would call the ascension of Christ. "And they worshipped him and returned to Jerusalem with great joy. And they were continually in the temple praising and blessing God." So there was a focused attention. They were continually in the temple. You remember the man and the woman that had anticipated, and their attention was focused on the arrival of the Messiah. And when they held Jesus as a little baby, they were thrilled that they had lived to see the day. You remember their names? Simeon and Anna. Anna, it says, was a prophetess. They had anticipation. They had desire. And they had a focused attention. You know, when you're focusing on something, you're paying attention. There are things in my occupation when we're looking for a problem electrically or something, we're focused on it. What is it doing? And we don't want to just see the numbers. We want to graph out what we're seeing so we can see spikes and all kinds of things. I know that's technical garbage, but anyway, we're looking for the details. Our attention is focused, and when this little hiccup happens, we can either say, "Aha, that's it, I see it, that's what my problem is." And Anna and Simeon were focused. They were old, were they not? One of them, it says, they were of a great age. But yet, they're in their view. What were they looking for? They was looking for the Messiah. And when they held the little baby There, I can see in my mind's eye, I can see these maybe somewhat trembling hands and tears running down their face and the joy that they felt because they're realizing what they've had in view for so long. What's it going to be like to be there? You know, one of the things that you can use to market something is have a famous person there. If we were able to get a well-respected public figure, maybe a president of the United States or a former president of the United States to be in service with us, we wouldn't, this marquee that's out here by the roundabout, all we'd have to say on there is former president and put his name on there will be at the Webb City Church of God June the 26th, 2022. Join us for service at 10:30. And we'd have to have the windows open and we'd have to get here early because there would be such a crowd we couldn't get in. Right? And you could keep him in the back room and preach to him for a long time. Said, hold on, he's going to come out of that door right over there. And you could have him. That's marketing. Did you know in heaven that Jesus is going to be there? Jesus is going to be there. He's the one that suffered for our sins. He's the one that paid the price. Where we can rebuke the devil and we can say, by the grace of God, I'm free. I've been delivered from whatever that was in the past. Jesus is going to be there. That's a marketing thing that we can use. In 1 Corinthians 13, the last verse, I believe it is, or almost the last verse, he says, for now we see through a glass darkly. We don't really know, but I'm looking in the Scripture. I'm looking in the lives of those that's been faithful. I want to know some details about that place. And this I know for sure, Jesus is going to be there. And I know that once we gain that eternal heavenly paradise and we're in queue, so to speak, to enter in, did you know? I'm not going to be looking back. It's going to be such a joyous accomplishment. It's going to be much better even than Anna and Simeon being able to hold little baby Jesus. It's precious to hold a little baby, especially when they're contented. And if they look at you and their little mouth breaks out into a smile, even before they know what they're doing, it's such a blessing to hold a little baby like that. And there's going to be the voice of God. In 2 Peter 1:17, and we'll bring this to a close. Thank you for your attention this morning. I feel like I've been kind of long-winded, but 2 Peter chapter 1 and verse 17. Peter says, for he received from God the Father honor and glory when there came such a voice to him from the excellent glory, this is my beloved Son in whom I'm well pleased. I wonder what, sometimes it seems like when God spoke to Jesus, the people that was around him just heard a noise like thunder or something. And here it almost seems like Peter heard it. Like he heard, what did the voice of the Lord sound like? What do you think? You think it's a raspy voice? You think it's a squeaky voice? You think it's a voice that's kind of snarly and puts your nerves on edge? I got to think that it's one of the deepest, calmest, most confident voices that we've ever heard. I believe to hear the voice of God say, "Well done, thou good and faithful servant." It's going to be something that's going to surpass any kind of accolades that we could have on this earth. So I just want to challenge us today to ever keep heaven in view. I know we have a lot. I for one, have many things on my plate. And life is busy. And there are so many things that can cause me to be distracted from really keeping heaven in view. I have interests, things I'd like to accomplish. I have passions, if you will, in this old world. Things that I want to see happen and I want to try to accomplish. But I'm determined by the grace of God to keep heaven in view. I'm looking for the details. I have a desire to be ready when my time comes. And I want to tell you the thought that Jesus will be there. The one that will let me see the scars in his hands and put my hand there maybe. And to hear the voice of the Lord say, "Well done." A voice that just exudes confidence and acceptance and approval. And to hear him say, "Well done, thou good and faithful servant." I want to keep that in my view. I don't want it to be some kind of peripheral thing that's like, "I wonder what was that?" I don't want it to be a bug in the night. I don't want it to be something that I can't tell exactly what it is. But I want it to be something that brings assurance and confidence and great joy in my heart. Desire your prayers that I'll be faithful.